Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptag. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only, and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. The first series of shows has been a general overview of the big picture of debt in four stages: the pre-debt stage before we take it on, two, the comfortable stage of having debt, three, the slippery slope stage, and four, finally, the apparent abyss one can fall into financially. This show provides practical general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are its traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. Also get notebook, paper, and a pen for later in the show. First, we start with debt-related news and facts for the week. Ford Motor Company reports sales for June of 2008. SUV sales are down 50%. Truck sales are down 47%. Car sales are down 28%. And crossover vehicles are down 18%. Another car-related issue, gas retail stations in parts of the U.S. have started adding 10 cents per gallon to use of a credit card when you make a purchase and 16 cents per gallon for use of a debit card. They claim that this transaction fee for a credit card is 2.5 cents on the dollar and 3.5 cents on the debit card. So they're putting that back on the consumer. Record foreclosures and limited access to credit will make it harder than the usual for U.S. housing economy to rebound from this slump, the worst at least since World War II, according to a Harvard University study. A two-year home price drop is eating into housing, wealth, curbing consumer spending, and slicing away economic growth. This is unlikely to change until potential home buyers are convinced that prices have stopped tumbling, this study found. The highest home loan rates in 9 months and strict lending standards are keeping buyers on the sidelines even after aggressive Federal Reserve intervention. Historically, housing markets recover only after the economy has entered a recession and a combination of falling mortgage interest rates and house prices have improved housing affordability, according to Nicholas Retsinas, director of the Joint Center for Housing Studies at Harvard. He said it will take longer this time to rebound, given the unusually high levels of foreclosures and constrained credit markets. The slump in housing markets has not yet run its full course, according to the study. Price declines and mortgage defaults are the worst on records dating back to the 1960s and 70s, the study noted. Job losses and falling prices intensify risk of foreclosures. The number of homes entering foreclosures nearly doubled to 1.3 million in 2007 from about 660,000 in 2005. Foreclosures are adding to an already massive supply of unsold homes, which further pressures prices. Also, new home building and house sales rival the worst downturns in the post-World War II era. The number of homeowners paying more than half of their income on housing surged by 35% to 8.8 million in 2006, up from 6.5 million 5 years earlier, according to this study. Also, as investors demand a higher return for assumed risk and limit credit to riskier borrowers, costs are rising for all types of mortgages, consumer and corporate loans, the center said. Many would-be borrowers are now finding it impossible to get loans at any price. The somber conclusion is that if the economy slips into recession or job losses keep racking up, household growth and home ownership demand could fall even more, the center said. To get home affordability back to the 2000 levels before a five-year record home price and sales surge would take some combination of large price declines, interest rate reductions, rent deflation, and unprecedented real income growth, said the study. Even then, homes will be out of reach for many vulnerable households, often made up of low-wage workers, families with children, and veterans. In another area or indicator, FedEx and shipping in general are considered bellwethers for the economy, and the news isn't good, according to FedEx. The operating environment for fiscal 2009 is expected to be very difficult due to the weak U.S. economy and extremely high fuel prices, according to Chief Financial Officer Alan B. Graf. Also, Chrysler, which is toying with the idea of filing a Chapter 11 bankruptcy, is seeing sales in June 20% below expectations. In November, executives were assuming Americans would buy only about 15.5 million vehicles in 2008. So far in June, J.D. Power and Associates and Citigroup are seeing a sales pace that is almost 20% lower than that, only 12.5 million vehicles per year. This is the lowest sales level in 16 years and indicates a significant and continued softening of the U.S. automotive market, Nardelli said from the Detroit Free Press. If J.D. Power's forecast for June, an annualized rate of 12.5 million sales, continues for long, some people say this is Armageddon, doomsday for the auto industry. Meanwhile, on a global scale from Bloomberg, Paulson & Company says write-downs may reach $1.3 trillion, according to John Paulson, founder of hedge fund Paulson & Company. The global write-downs and losses from the credit crisis may reach $1.3 trillion. We're only about a third of the way through the write-down, said Paulson at a hedge fund conference in Monaco. So as we go from the U.S. indications to the global indications, it's all interconnected and it is struggling. And finally, Whitehall Jewelers filed for a Chapter 11 bankruptcy. This is the largest jewelry retailer to seek court protection as the sagging U.S. economy cuts into consumers' discretionary spending. And added to the list may be 950 pilots from United, which is planning to terminate them as soon as possible. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. Now we'll move into segment two of the show, where we'll do a recap of the last week's show, continuing to take control of your financial situation by creating balance and having a place in the comfortable stage of the debt curve, the place we all want to be now and in the future. At this point, I also give an important credit as the thoughts, ideas, and examples used are based on the work, theories, and books of Professor Elizabeth Warren from Harvard and her MBA daughter, Amelia Warren Tyagi, two of America's leading champions for debtors, and this show highly recommends their books, All You're Worth and The Two Income Trap. Most of these shows build one upon another, and to look at the archive or listen to the archive shows, I should say, you can go to www.liptaklaw.com/life-and-debt to listen to the prior shows. What we've been talking about is the bare necessities and trying to create a 50% of your net income at the level of your bare necessities, for your bare necessities. And we were recently talking about refinancing your mortgage, so you'll have to go back to former shows to listen to all the specific points. But one thing, as we mentioned last week, is you want to request the HUD-1 form to be sent to you before the closing. And this lists every line expense. It's required by law. You look over it on your own time without the pressure of the closing. And you compare that with the estimate from the bank. And so now you're going to see what they're really saying you're going to pay and what they estimated you were going to pay. If there's new costs or something you don't like, you can walk away from this deal. This is a refinancing deal. So on closing day, if it changed from what they sent, don't sign. The bait and switch is common in this field. Remember, this is refinancing. You have a mortgage, so you can take your time. If something seems not right, you can always walk away. And also, once you have signed under federal law, you have a 3-day right to rescind, as long as, of course, you give them the money back. But this is something that you can do. All this is hard work, and it takes time, but the savings can be substantial and well worth your effort in terms of getting your must-have level to 50% of your net disposable income. Another bare necessity issue, a must-have issue, which we discussed to help reduce it to the 50% level, is if you are actually renting and don't own, then you can look at the time when your rent is changing or getting raised to compare similar places in your area, your neighborhood, and negotiate if not in line with those similar rent offerings. You can look at the city tenant laws. Rent may be controlled or the increases may be limited. So you research that and you go and you talk or you write to your landlord, and you should be very polite, accurate, and honest about your need to manage your finances carefully so you don't get into trouble. And this works particularly well if the vacancy for the landlord may be a month or two when you leave, because that's just lost money for him. And as I mentioned in the past, also see if there are any jobs with the landlord, like simple maintenance or cleaning jobs, painting, etc., that you can bargain for. And the key is to be smart and see where you can bargain to save yourself money. The next bare necessities limit issue is the long-term contracts. There are lots of lures to get you to sign these long-term contracts. First month is for free, there's discounts, free equipment, free gifts, gimmicks, and freebies to suck you in. They want the contract because they know that without it, you will eventually drop out when you see what you're getting for the money that you're paying. So most often these are for want things, not the bare necessities or must-have kinds of things. So they're not essential. Which we need to remind you about what the bare necessities are. A bare necessity is something which is necessary for your basic safety and dignity. You would spend money on it even if you lost your job. You couldn't live without this for 6 months. That's the basic premises for a bare necessity. Everything else is a want. So the hard and fast rule here is, for long-term contracts, never sign for anything that is not a bare necessity, not a must-have. Only for a house situation, college, car, those kinds of things that are bare necessities. And as we said in the past, if it's possible, get rid of the long-term want contracts you have signed when they run out. That gym, that phone, that satellite TV, in many instances, these things are not necessary and you're being charged more than you need to pay. The rule is to make as few commitments on paper as you can. You should be paying as you go and realize that you need to adapt to your life as it unfolds. And the less money of yours that is tied down, the more flexibility you will have. These things will help get your bare necessities to 50%. And as we mentioned last week too, if not, then there's some things you can still do. You can go out and try to get a tenant or a roommate. If you have the room in your place, be selective for someone who's compatible with you and check out your local zoning ordinances and lease term requirements, security deposit rules, etc., and make it, of course, manageable for a term that you can at least have a trial period of month to month or 1 year max, so you can test this for yourself. But this is a good opportunity to make a little income for yourself, and that is very useful. I also mentioned in the past how in Europe there actually is the extended family concept of two or even sometimes three generations in a house. And even if these people are your relatives, get them into your homestead. And if it is something that works personality-wise, what they found in Europe is that this can really enrich your life in unexpected ways. Of course, if it's not going to work out personality-wise, then you should avoid that. but we're looking at financial improvements here that are comfortable and will sustain your overall financial picture in the short term and ultimately in the long run. Another area where it can help reduce your bare necessities costs is buying a vehicle. You should almost always now buy used if you are struggling with your bare necessities. All the facts and research show that this costs a lot less than buying new, even with repairs, and sometimes there's a lot of repairs. If you're really worried about that, you go and get a pre-certified, pre-owned vehicle with a warranty, and that gives you some feeling of security, but you're going to drive these vehicles until really they don't drive anymore. Of course, you want them to be safe and mechanically sound, but even with repair bills to make them so, it is immeasurably more inexpensive to have a used vehicle than to have a new vehicle. And that is, of course, if you're not owning the vehicle outright. If you can pay for the vehicle outright with cash, that's a different story. But a new vehicle that you're paying a long-term loan on is going to be very expensive. Another point is leasing vehicles. We should never lease vehicles. Car companies make the most money they make on leasing deals. For you, it costs way more than even buying a new car. They like to lease vehicles, but they suck you in with the concept of a lesser monthly payment. However, in real money over time, this is a forever deal. You never own anything. You just keep leasing month to month to month. Odometer will create extra fees when you turn in the vehicle. You're gaining no equity. The monthly payment goes on forever. And then there's fees for little dings and damages to the vehicle. All of that comes out as being a loss for you in the short run and the long run. And if you're buying a used car, you should also not just buy with the loan that is offered from the dealer. Don't get sucked into the monthly payment idea. They'll go in and come back with a slip of paper saying this is what you'll be paying every month. Now, on the contrary, you should be shopping around, because this minimum monthly payment idea is just telling you that you can afford this for some months, but it's over how many years? 5 years? 6 years? And many of the big car companies actually own the lender, and this is in fact where they make the most money in the vehicle deals, is by lending for those vehicles, not on selling the vehicle in the first place. So you need to shop around. Do comparison shopping, just like with mortgages. You go to local banks, go to credit unions, and you may come up with a much better deal. If you're just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and we're speaking about reducing the amount of your bare necessity costs each month, so you can be at 50% of your net disposable income for your must-haves, your bare necessities. And we're talking a little bit about preferring used cars over new cars. Of course, if you are at 50% of your must-haves or bare necessities owning a new car, then no problem. But most of us aren't there, so the car is a problem. That new car is a problem. And remember, if you can't make those payments, repossessions statistically are up in the economy right now. And a lot of it is on these high-priced, gas-guzzling new vehicles. With new cars, they lose value as soon as you drive them out of the showroom, and the value continues to drop sharply, and you are essentially upside down. Your loan stays high for a long time as you pay the bulk of the interest first before you pay principal in any substantial amount. So on a long-term loan, you have a vehicle worth very little in comparison to a large balance on your loan. So you are paying a new car price on an extraordinarily used car after a short period of time. If possible, once the value of your car is worth the same as the amount owed on the loan, trade it in, and get a less expensive vehicle and a more efficient economical vehicle, used vehicle that is. Another area we want to look at to reduce your bare necessity expenses: if you are renting furniture, appliances like washers, dryers, TVs, DVDs, anything like this, DVD players that is, anything else, try to give it back. Call the lease company and find out how fast you can get rid of it. These are usually very bad deals financially. And the rent to own is an even bigger ripoff. You are charged 3 to 10 times too much, and usually the quality is marginal, if not poor, for the items that they're giving you. So you just can call and quit these rent-to-own contracts and give the stuff back. In most cases, you can do it. That's why they're rent-to-own. You can get out of the rent part of it. In all these cases, always buy something you can afford with cash, even if from a used furniture and appliance store, on eBay or Craigslist, at flea markets or garage sales. It's just a much better stance for you financially, where you're not giving out your hard-earned money in unwise and uneconomical ways. Another place where we can do some bare necessities trimming is in health insurance bills. If you get your health insurance through your job, look carefully at lower cost options for all the basics where there are no added costs for things that don't make sense for you. You can visit the National Committee for Quality Insurance online at www.ncqa.org, www.ncqa.org, to get information on your plan. And you need to do the math. Ask your benefit planner at your job about the cheaper plan and if there were any complaints about it. If not, it may save you money without sacrificing your health. So that's one thing to look at. But you need to have a health insurance plan. Get a flex plan or a health savings account if you're a small company or self-employed. And if you are sure that you will have some medical expenses that can be covered, like, for example, prescription expenses, glasses, dentist, orthodontist, some basic recurring medical payments that you have to make. You add it up and have it put, that amount of money, put into the flexible spending account or health savings account over the year from your pay. And then you pay the medical bill from that account. And it's kind of interesting because in some plans, even before the money goes into the account, you can use it to pay because it is scheduled to be deposited from your future earnings. Now, these plans, what they do is they save taxes. It is money that is not included in your income as far as your tax responsibility is concerned. And the tax people tell us that the discount, in effect, from doing this is about 30% on each medical bill. So that is a substantial amount of savings every time you use your flex money to pay for the medical bill. Another consideration is if both you and your spouse have medical plans, do the math and see which is the most cost-effective approach. And especially make sure there is no double coverage, so you're not paying twice for the same coverage. And then from there, if you don't have health insurance, well, frankly, you really should have some health insurance, as everyone needs it. This saves going broke if there is a medical event. And even small things can be very costly these days, like an appendectomy or slipped disc. Extraordinarily expensive things, and it's often quite surprising. Health insurance gives you the best possible coverage and care. Also, research has shown that if you get seriously ill, you are more likely to die from your illness if you are uninsured. So the best investment in this matter is in yourself. Saying, "I hardly ever get sick," or "it costs too much," is not really intelligent thinking and would wind up in an insolvency or bankruptcy posture for most people if there was a serious illness and not adequate medical coverage. If you hardly ever get sick, in fact, then it actually is possible to get a health insurance policy with a high deductible, and then that's doable. If you feel it costs too much, check it out. Get some quotes from brokers. Go with a high deductible to ward off the serious illness if it ever comes up. And also go and get a no-frill plan. This covers the serious illness, which is important if you can do without some of the other normally covered items. So that's a possibility to make sure that you're covered for serious illnesses. And if you leave your job, hold on tightly to your COBRA at least for a while so you can shop around for less expensive insurance. Uninterrupted coverage gives you a better deal on your next policy. If you have kids, check out Medicaid. Many states offer free or reduced cost insurance for families of moderate income and for people with certain disabilities. It is not just for poor people. So go to the internet, look to see if your kids qualify, both in your state, and go to the government, Medicare, and Medicaid services at www.cms.hhs.gov. That again is www.cms.hhs.gov. If you are in the military, check out the VA, which can give phenomenally good coverage for veterans. Also, try to buy through a group plan. Professional groups and unions offer preferred rates, and those are very good. Also, discount cards sometimes are being available now and pushed by the government. These do not replace real insurance, so make sure that you have real insurance. And don't buy specific problem insurance, cancer insurance, something that covers one or two items. This policy is expensive, but it won't cover all the medical problems, and that's the kind of policy you want for your general situation. Another kind of problematic policy is the low annual limits policy, coverage up to $10,000 or $20,000. This is not going to cover serious illness. One day at the hospital will eat that up. I know of a firefighter who had 3 open heart surgeries on a valve in his heart due to smoke inhalation over 15 years. Medical and hospital expenses were in excess of $1 million. And there are a lot of events like this. So the insurance cap of your policy should really be around $1 million. It's a very important consideration in getting your insurance. And another thing you should think about with insurance is disability insurance. There is a 1 in 4 chance, or 25%, that you will face a spell of disability, some period of disability in your life. So this should be part of your basic health plan, your basic financial plan, your basic insurance plan. Each year, more than 300,000 people without disability insurance will go bankrupt because of this fact. So if you have an employer that offers it, get it from your employer. If not, shop on your own and get several quotes, and you'll be glad if you do and an event comes up. And the final tip for the week is when you negotiate or hire someone to negotiate your debt for less money or to do a workout on your mortgage, in other words, the creditor accepts some lesser amount of money than you owe, unless you are insolvent at that time, you might very well receive a 1099 debt forgiveness form for the amount you don't pay and have to pay income taxes on that amount. Debt negotiation and settlement does have its traps, so be careful. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life in Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous, debt manageable life.